Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. You'll be glad you did.
Welcome back, folks. We're joined by Rafael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. The other day, the New Orleans District Attorney's Office issued a press release saying Peter Visage of the Orleans Parish District Attorney's Office achieved a significant victory on February 20th with the conviction of defendant Kevin Vicknair for second-degree rape. The verdict was delivered in a bench trial presided over by the Honorable Judge Angel Harrison, Section L. This case stemmed from a delayed report of domestic abuse rape dating back to August of 2016, which was brought to light only in 2021. The victim, who endured physical, emotional, and sexual abuse throughout her 40-year marriage to the defendant, took a courageous step to document the abuse. Setting up a hidden camera in her room, she captured the harrowing events leading up to the rape. The footage revealed the defendant's violent actions as he forcibly assaulted her. Despite the defendant's claims that no one would believe her, the victim bravely held on to the evidence until she could safely leave the abusive situation. In 2021, she reported the rape to the Family Justice Center, leading to the prosecution and eventual conviction of Kevin Vicknair. And now, the rest of the story. With Rafael Goyeneche, welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning, Bill. Right. So, you know, one of the toughest cases to secure the continued cooperation of to hold violent offenders accountable are sexual assaults and rapes. So this is very typical in many respects, but also atypical in a number of respects, where it takes a lot for victims to work through the process, because it really is a long and winding road as a sexual assault victim to report it and follow through. And, you know, this is, you know, an example of, you know, a really courageous victim stepping forward and having to bare her soul to criminal justice. And under Louisiana law, the defendant has the right, and that's the exclusive right, to either be tried by a judge or a jury. So the defendant in this case waived the right to a jury trial and elected to be tried by a judge. And so this case was tried in February of 2024. It was a judge trial, so the judge is the trier of facts taking the place of the jury. And as you pointed out, the case was largely built on the video footage that the victim secured by planting a hidden camera in her room when she was sexually assaulted. And she was in an abusive relationship for 40 years, you know, with the defendant, her now former husband. And after the judge heard all of the facts, the judge came back with a guiltiest charge verdict of second-degree rape. And that carries a mandatory minimum of 5 and a maximum of 40 years. So fast forward to about a week ago, the judge sentenced the defendant and granted him probation. So she ignored Louisiana Revised Statute 1442.1, which sets forth the mandatory minimum sentence requirements for the offense that she found him guilty of. And then she further ignored the provisions of Louisiana law by allowing for a downward departure. So under certain provisions of the law, an offense that requires a mandatory minimum, the law provides that under certain circumstances, the defendant can petition the court or the district attorney's office can move on their own to allow the judge to deviate from the mandatory minimums. But that provision of the law excludes sex offenses and particularly second-degree rape. So I think the judge not only violated one state law, but two state laws in granting this offender a probated sentence. So she sentenced him to 7 years, but suspended those 7 years and placed him on active probation for 3 years. And the district attorney's office objected to that, and now they have to go through the process of appealing the judge's illegal sentence that was rendered in this case. And this is the type of case that, A, has a chilling effect on victims and witnesses in crimes of violence, and B, I think, undermines public confidence in the criminal justice system in general and the judiciary in particular. So this is, you know, last week we talked about what happens when the district attorney's office, what are the consequences when the district attorney's office doesn't do its job appropriately. And we talked about the Darnell Hunter case where the DA's office allowed a violent and repeat offender to receive probation. And within a few months of him being granted a probated sentence, he committed a murder. And this is an example of the judiciary, more particularly Judge Harris, not doing her job. She takes an oath to follow and enforce the laws of Louisiana. She violated that oath, in my opinion, with this ruling. And now we're going to have to wait for an appellate court to reverse her and remand the case to her for her to impose a legal sentence. But again, this is a sad statement as to, A, the judge's knowledge of the law, or B, her indifference to the law. Either scenario, either way you slice it, it's unacceptable. And I think it's important that the public hear more about this particular case because of the consequences that these types of rulings have in undermining public confidence in the criminal justice system and the judiciary in particular.
I'm going to go out on a limb here, Rafi. She's not ignorant of the law, right? I mean, there are two laws here, 1442.1 and Code of Criminal Procedure 890.1, right? I mean, this is not rocket science. I mean, the language, as you just articulated, in both of these statutes, or the statute and the Code of Criminal Procedure, is so clear, it's scary, right? So this is not not knowing the law. This begs the question, why? And there's an outcome that she wanted, I think, based on her ideological bent. She comes from the criminal defense bar. You know, we look at things differently. And I don't know how else to say it. You know, we have those that have spent their life prosecuting. We've had those that spent their life on the defense side. And we've had those that have prosecuted and then moved to the defense side. And there's always these little nuances about what they believe. But when you're staring what's obvious in the law in the face and you still try and do something differently. You know, this is where I get frustrated with the court, where they should be sanctioned. The court should be sanctioned here because they know better. They know better. And we're not going to clean this mess up. You know, I just had a similar conversation with council member Helena Moreno about guns. You know, one of the issues with the, you know, thinking about the gun-free zone that you and I have talked about in the French Quarter and otherwise, and I'm hearing from legislators, you know, they said, you know, it's kind of ripe for y'all to be up here asking about this, that, and otherwise, when your own criminal justice system doesn't take to heart guns, you know, and they point to, of course, the Emily Law, Emily Maw happenstance, right, where we just take action devoid of the law. We act in a way that's just not serious about guns at all. And it really puts the whole everybody on the defensive. How do you defend that? I can't. Can you? It's just, you know, and you can't have a legitimate conversation because our house is not in order. And here's another example of the house not being in order.
Right. So, you know, you're right. I agree. The judge knew the law. So the judge issued, you know, an opinion and in defense of what she's doing. And, of course, her sentence was defended by the defendant's defense counsel.
Sure.
But, you know, the thing.
Who also knows the law.
Exactly. But his job is to defend his client, you know. But, you know, at the end of the day, the judge is supposed to be fair and impartial and apply the law. What I don't understand is if the judge felt that the sentence was too harsh, as the trier of the fact, she had the ability to render a lesser included verdict if she so chose. And she didn't. So she basically came to the conclusion that the state met its burden of proof in proving this defendant guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. And I certainly think that, you know, in this particular case, if this had just been he said, she said, it'd been very, very tough to obtain a conviction. But there was video evidence, and even the judge couldn't ignore the video evidence. Hence, even though she may not have wanted to have found him guilty because maybe she has a defendant-centric philosophy, more concerned with the defendants than they are with the victims and witnesses and law-abiding citizens. But she nonetheless found him guilty as charged based on the evidence, but she could have come back with a lesser charge that would have possibly, depending on what the lesser offense that she found him guilty of, allowed for her to do what she did, but she ignored the law with respect to the sentencing requirements, followed the law with respect to the evidence and the burden of proof, and now she is trying to justify what is legally indefensible, in my opinion. And we'll find out, I think, in short measure from the appellate courts, how if this case is remanded, as I expect that it will be, for resentencing. And then and only then will this victim that has struggled through this process for the better part of 8 years may receive justice and closure.
Yeah. And it's not like we don't have a lot of other things to do, right? I mean, when things are as evident as this is, you know, in carrying this out, now we have to go consume more assets of an organization, the district attorney's office, that has limited resources. We know that for a fact. You know, to go tie up these resources in this fashion. I mean, it's just...
So the DA's office did everything right in this particular case. In fact,
absolutely.
They warned the judge that this is illegal. They cited the law to her. And so even if she hadn't looked it up, even if she didn't want to, you know, do her homework on this, the district attorney's office did the homework for her. And she still did what she did, which, you know, I think you're right in that this type of conduct is, in my opinion, a violation of some of the judicial canons. and the Office of Disciplinary Counsel for the State Judiciary Commission, they could take a look at this case and open a file on this judge. Now, do I think that's going to result in her removal from office? No. But just like with everything else, discipline is progressive. And I think that, you know, the Supreme Court needs to take notice of a judge that is ignoring the law and flouting the law. And she needs to be, if not publicly, at least privately reprimanded if this is her first offense, and admonished that this better not happen going forward or the consequences could be more severe.
You know, I wouldn't hold my breath waiting on that, but that's why we find ourselves in the situation that we find ourselves in society today.
Well, a lot of the sanctions that are issued to judges, particularly for judges that, you know, in a matter like this, they're not public.
And, no, you know, of course not.
That's under the law. So, you know, the public is shielded. You know, we elect judges, and very rarely is an incumbent judge even challenged. So basically, once you're elected, you're there practically for as long as you want to be, for all intents and purposes, in large part because if judges have done anything improper, the laws of Louisiana shield the public from being aware of judicial misconduct in many respects. And that's something that requires some changes in the law, but, you know, that's not going to, we can't do that retroactively. But, you know, this particular case, I think, needs to be aired out in public. Public needs to be aware of it. And Judge Harris, in my opinion, owes the public an apology if this case is reversed by the appellate courts, as I expect it will be.
Why would we want the public to know, right?
I mean, right.
We're the only we have to go into voting booth and vote, you know, these people up or down. Why would we want to know any information, positive, negative, or otherwise? Let me ask you.
The judges are rarely even, you know, challenged. But, you know, now maybe with this type of exposure, maybe someone will decide to run against Judge Harris when she comes up for re-election.
Well, this is the perfect example of why we need to vote down Senate Bill 482, right? This public records law. Where do you stand on this thing? I mean, you know, when I think about how much information would probably be shielded from you and others, you know, of this deliberative process and this and that. I mean, when I think back over the years of all of the topics of discussion that we've had, and I look at this bill and I'm saying, you know, first off, with this deliberative process, it's a pretty broad term, right?
Right.
This is a travesty. That these folks are even, these are the law and order folks that are allegedly thinking about this. What are we doing?
Right. Right. No, the public records legislation that's pending right now is basically, I haven't seen an attempt like this since the Jindal administration, where Governor Jindal attempted to essentially exempt the governor's office from Public Records Act. This legislation, I think, goes beyond even that. Yes, it includes shielding the deliberative processes involved in the governor's office, but it also applies to every agency. So essentially, everything could be construed as being part of the deliberative processes in every agency in the state. And then on top of it, some of the legislation requires you to prove that you're a Louisiana citizen before you go, which would be another chilling impact on the public getting access to information. I think we ought to be, rather than looking for excuses to not provide the information, I think we ought to be digitizing the information, and it should be put online, and the public should have direct access to it just by a couple of clicks of the button rather than making public records requests. I think all of the information should be placed online for the public to be able to glean the information that they, I think, are entitled to know about government in Louisiana.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know where this bill is supposed to be heard on the Senate floor today. Senate Bill 482 by Senator Heather Cloud from Turkey Creek, Louisiana. I understand it's not going to be heard today. I just got word from some folks that it's not going to be. They're trying to amend this. I don't know why they need to touch it at all. Can you, you know, it ain't broke. Why you got to fix it? What are you trying to fix?
Right, right. No, I mean, again, a lot of the things that come out of the legislature defy common sense and logic, and that is one. You know, the other is some of the concealed carry legislation that we've been following, and maybe we can talk about some of that in the next segment.
Yeah, why don't we do that? Let's get to a break right now. We're visiting with Rafael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. We'll be right back after the break, folks. Give us a shout or text on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line, 504-260-1870. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Ready to go party? Now's your chance to win a pair of tickets to Jazz Fest. Today's password is Creole, C-R-E-O-L-E. That's Creole. Now go to WWL.com/contest and register to win. It's that easy. Don't miss your chance to win Jazz Fest tickets, plus a round-trip Jazz Fest Express shuttle pass as well. WWL is giving away a pair every day this week. All you have to do is listen to Tommy, me, Scoot, or Sports Talk for the Jazz Fest password of the day to see amazing artists like Foo Fighters, Neil Young, Bonnie Raitt, Queen Latifah, Greta Van Fleet, Trombone Shorty, and more. Good luck and happy festing from Miller Lite, the official beer of Jazz Fest and WWL. We're visiting with Rafael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. Rafi, let's pivot and talk about Senator Talbert's Senate Bill 419, where about this gun-free zone in the French Quarter. I know they're working on it. I talked to Helena Moreno in the 10 o'clock hour. She went up and testified. She hears that they're trying to reach some compromise. What are you hearing?
Right. I'm hearing the compromise that's being offered. So under Louisiana law, there are 11 enumerated exceptions to our gun-free zones in under state law right now. What Senator Talbot's bill is talking about doing is creating a 12th exception. So right now, the 11 exceptions to carrying a concealed weapon with or without a permit are: you can't bring a firearm into a police station, into a jail or prison, into a courthouse, into polling places, into municipal buildings, into the state capitol, into airports, along parade or demonstration routes, into ABOs and schools. What Senator Talbot is doing is proposing a 12th exception, but an exception that will allow anyone to carry a concealed weapon with a permit in the French Quarter. But you're not going to be able to carry a concealed weapon unless you have a permit. So what's the downside to having a permit? You know, as opposed to Act 1 that was passed during the crime special session earlier this year. So to obtain a permit under Louisiana law, you know, you have to be at least age 21. Under Act 1, you only have to be age 18. Under the permitted carry law, you need to have training. You can't be an illegal alien. You can't have any felony convictions within the last 10 years. You can't have been committed for treatment for drug use in the last 5 years. No convictions for crimes of violence, not be a fugitive or have warrants, active warrants authorizing your arrest. No mental institutionalization, no dishonorable discharge from the military. Those are some of the fundamental requirements under the current state law. Those go out of the, you know, that is no longer a requirement to carry a concealed weapon. All you need to be is age 18, and you can carry a concealed weapon without any training, without any of the other background checks that go into that. And what Louisiana has done is they have carved out 11 exceptions, which are basically firearm-free zones. Well, what Senator Talbot is doing is not creating a firearm-free zone. It's basically saying that the French Quarter, you can carry a concealed weapon under the current law in the French Quarter if you have a concealed carry permit. It's just going to continue the present law under the new law come July 4th going forward. So this is a really commonsensical approach. And why is this important? This is, you know, you talk about the Second Amendment, right? But there's also the right to public safety. And what the Crime Commission has done is we've been tracking, you know, crime trends in this city going back to 2020. And what we have seen is, and we've talked about this in nauseating detail over the last 4 years, how crime has gone up. And now in the past year and 4 months, we've seen crime go down. And one of the reasons that I believe that crime went down in 2023 and has continued to go down in 2024 is because the police department has gone back to proactive policing strategies that include gun enforcement. So in the French Quarter, you have people that are walking the streets of the French Quarter. The police have been trained to look for the outline of a concealed weapon under someone's clothing. And if they see someone walking down the street, that gives them the predication or probable cause to approach them, to ask them if they're carrying a concealed weapon. If they say, yes, I'm carrying a weapon, they ask them, do you have a permit to carry that weapon? If the answer is no, then the officer can proceed with the arrest. So almost all of those stops start with a misdemeanor stop. And between 50 and 60% of those misdemeanor stops evolve into felony arrests. So initially the police go up to them because they're carrying a concealed weapon, which is a misdemeanor. When they begin to confect the arrest, they're able to run their name and determine if there's a warrant for their arrest. They're able to determine if that weapon is stolen property. They're able to determine if the offender is a convicted felon in possession of a firearm. They're able to determine if the weapon has been made fully automatic. So between 50 and 60% of those arrests get upgraded to felonies, which shows that those offenders are true public safety threats. In 2023, the police department seized over 2,700 firearms in calendar year 2023. As of April the 15th this year, they've seized 820 firearms. And if Act 1 goes into effect without any amendments to it or any changes, the Talbot bill offering one of them, I believe that that's going to be a setback to public safety, not just in New Orleans, but statewide. But what Senator Talbot is attempting to do is to give that tool back to the police department just within the confines of the French Quarter. And keep in mind that the people that are coming into the French Quarter, in many instances carrying concealed weapons, don't live in the French Quarter. They're coming from other parts of the city. And as they get arrested for that, those guns get taken out of commerce. And what we've seen is beginning in the second half of 2022, when crime was going up, we began to see the police department lean into firearms enforcement. And what we have seen is, as the police made more felony firearm arrests, we've seen violent crime come down in 2023 and 2024. So there is a real connect. You don't have to wait for someone to take out a gun and shoot it for the police to respond. The police are trained to look for that. And that tool is particularly important where the You know, the majority of the traffic in the French Quarter is going to be foot traffic down there. You take that tool away from them, the people that are arrested for felony firearms violations in the French Quarter, they're coming from other parts of town. And if they are removed, if those guns are taken out of commerce and they're in custody as a convicted felon in possession of a firearm, that means that they're not on the streets to be committing some of the murders, attempt murders, carjackings, and armed robberies. And I think that policy of the police department in using that tool is a large part for the across-the-board reductions that we've seen in violent crime in virtually all categories of crime, because criminals in many instances are generalists, not specialists. So you take that tool away from the police department, it's going to have an adverse impact on the department's ability to proactively reduce violent crime. It means they're going to have to wait for someone to dial 911, which means that somebody's already been hurt in many instances, and it's a setback. So this Talbot bill, Senate Bill 419, is critically important to the city of New Orleans, and I think that it's commonsensical. I'm hoping that the Crime Commission, as well as a number of civic and business groups, are all supporting the Talbot legislation as well.
Yeah, I think we need to put the pressure on these folks. You know, I keep getting texts. Well, you know, the only people that are going to have guns are going to be the criminal thugs. Well, that's the whole point, right? I mean, you're deploying a strategy that has been proven to be incredibly effective, and if you allow Act 1 to continue and go into place, I think it goes into place, July 4th, if my memory serves
That's
me correct.
Right. Yes, you're right, July.
You know, without creating that exception, like in Senator Talbot's bill, you've taken that strategy away. And so you can't be probative. You can't be intrusive. You can't do anything from that point forward. And everything is going to change. Not to mention, you know, I keep saying this, the way that traffic stops will be conducted is going to change. It's changed in other states, and a lot of people don't like it, you know, when they're making you exit cars and everything else for officer safety, because that officer safety standard goes up tenfold, right?
Right, right. You know, keep in mind, I talked about the 11 exceptions that exist are basically gun-free zones. You know, and the argument is that, well, we have all these gun-free zones, but crime was still bad in the city of New Orleans and other municipalities in Louisiana. But how many shootings occur in police stations or jails or prisons or courthouses or polling places or in the state capitol or airports? Those are all gun in schools. Those are gun-free zones.
But, absolutely. You know, got to get to a break, Rafi. I apologize. Got to get to a break. We're visiting with Rafi Goyeneche. We'll be right back. Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Rafael Goyeneche, President, Metropolitan Crime Commission. Rafi, just a few minutes left. Final thoughts.
Well, so I think when we're talking about common sense and public safety, some of the advances that the police department has made are a result of firearms enforcement. And that tool is about to be taken away from them. And I would urge anybody, you know, listening to this show to call up their representative or senator and ask them to support the legislation, Senate Bill 419 by Senator Talbot. I think it's a very thoughtful and appropriate bit of legislation that will allow the police to continue to make some of the advances that we've enjoyed over the past 2 years with respect to crime reductions.
No, absolutely. I know that he has taken his time and trying pulling this piece of legislation together, giving everybody an opportunity to weigh in, which I think is a good thing for sure. As always, Rafi, this hour flies by. We thank you so much for joining us Monday at this hour, and we appreciate your time and your insight. Have a great week.
You too. Thank you, Bill. Bye-bye.
That's Rafael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. You're not going to believe this. On April 9th, a student was suspended from school. The teacher gave out vocabulary words, and one of them was alien. The student asked for clarification on the word's intended use. Is that like space aliens or illegal aliens? Suspended because that word was found to be offensive and disrespectful to his Hispanic peers in his classroom. The word illegal alien actually appears in the federal code of the United States of America. Now we're suspending students for saying. You can't make this up.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.